Ciao ragazzi, nice to see you on my YouTube channel, Luke Gamrot. So, today, it's my special guest is Nicolino Applauso. So, applauso for Nicolino Applauso.
Grazie.
I know that story. I'm pretty sure when you were young, that was your nightmare in the school, in during that every day. Like, Nicolino Applauso, just come everyone. Ah, Nicolino Applauso. So sorry.
No, it's fine. If you do it, I feel honored.
That was the time in Italy, but you moved to US. Mm-hmm. So there is no applauso for Nicolino Applauso?
Well, now they don't know the meaning of applause, which means applaud. But at least they applaud me for other things, not related to my last name, which is better, I think.
So why are you here? Because today is the special edition of our conversation. We want to speak and try to answer about the question, how to become Italian. So that's the reason why we want to speak to each other, because you are Italian and you are an American, the most powerful and most influenced country in the world, and then the most, I don't know, yeah, for me is the most enjoyable nation in the world. I love Italian. I love the feeling that I'm a little bit Italian.
After a good taste.
Good taste, of course. But what does it mean for you to be Italian?
Oh, good question. I think the question is simple, but I think the answer may be complicated, because being Italian can mean many things, especially because Italy connects really with the language. You know, the Italian language is a source of pride. If you speak English not correctly in the United States, it's not a big deal. Because, you know, the United States was a colony of England, so speaking in English is not that important. Of course, English is an important component. In America, English is still an important way of communication, but it's still, I would say, there's American English. So what I'm trying to say, the identity of being American with the language is not as strong as in Italy. So being Italian, especially for me that I'm into language instructor, is really a connection with the speaking, the beautiful language. Sometimes Italians judge other Italians if they don't speak correctly Italian.
Oh my God.
And that doesn't happen in other countries.
So they need to hate me. They need to hate me, because after 10 months, so sorry, Italian, I still can speak Italian very well. Like, io parlo poco.
Bravissimo. It's just a matter of trying.
Yes, it's trying. It's a very big try. But I can see when I'm coming back to some restaurant, and the owner, she's a lovely lady, but she's mad at me that when I come back, hey, you still don't speak Italian? Why? Try to start to learn.
You see, and there's always a way that you can learn as the practice, and that's in a way of saying be Italian like us, because being Italian also means to dance and the same dance, so speaking the same language.
Dancing in the language.
Yeah,
dancing
exactly.
between the world. You're a professor on the university in US. Yeah. You're an author. You're a writer. Could you tell us something more about your work?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm a medievalist, so my great love is Dante, the Divine Comedy. I studied at the University of Bologna, medieval history. Then one of my professors was Umberto Eco, as you probably know.
Oh, my God.
He was a great author, but also a great medieval scholar. Nermin of the Rose, I think, a good way to connect medieval culture to fiction, but also history. So he was a great mentor, as I remember. So my research is connected a little bit to humor, as you probably
know. Oh, my God, so great.
About those two authors. And that's why I embarked on this project when I published my first book, and also my second, on Dante and satire and humor in connection to politics. So my work is about political satire and literature, and how the two connect and create a call to be responsible. So
you've got a big opportunity in Italy to make that satire.
Oh yeah, satire is an Italian invention.
So if you just touch this topic, I need to ask about the recent death of Berlusconi. Oh. I think he was like a big field for satire and things. What do you think about him, like a politician?
I try to be objective, because that's what an author should do. I'm also in the process of finalizing this textbook about the history of Italy, and it's going to be objective, because that's the role of an historian. So I try to be objective too, because Berlusconi, either you love him or hate him, you know, it cannot be in between. So I try to be objective, and I'm going to say this. So it's been 20 years, so in the good and the bad, Berlusconi influenced Italian politics, changed a little bit the perspective on things. I'm not going to say that he did good things or bad things, because that sounds that I'm taking position, and he's a very, I won't say divisive, but very strong character in Italy. So, but he definitely changed the idea of success, for example, and hard work. That may be something that previous generation really valued. With Berlusconi, the idea of success was related also to entrepreneurship, and also have a way to a little bit like, you know, in a way like his predecessor, like Donald Trump, which is not a businessman, tries to show this kind of bravery in connection to be smart. And, so
but
I don't know
based
about that,
on Dante, you think that after Berlusconi died, he went to heaven or hell?
Well, there's a lot of speculation. There's actually this writer, journalist, to put him straight in hell.
Which circle?
I think there's going to be his own circle of hell for Berlusconi. And being the star with the B by Belzebub, not far from Belzebub, but I don't want to be too
Say hello to Belzebub and Berlusconi.
Okay. Well, if you're interested, there is the Vernacoliere, which is a satirical journal. There is a whole section on Berlusconi in hell, and also they show him that he goes to paradise looking. They say, no, Berlusconi, you can't have sex with the angel. I'm sorry, you can't. And then, so there's a lot of humor about the Berlusconi in paradise, maybe because he has money.
Yeah.
So he went up because he paid somebody, or maybe hell because there's more action. There's a lot of discussion. Purgatory, definitely not. He's not there.
If he went to hell, I think he would be the manager of hell after a couple of months.
Yeah, he may run the show in a little bit. Who knows?
But that's a very interesting question, because you've got a really interesting point of view, like a perspective from the person who actually understand the politics in here in Italy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you refer to Donald Trump. And now we've got like a big, big fight also in US between the Trump supporters. I don't know. So sorry, guys, that in every single conversation when I speak with the people from US, I always ask about Donald Trump. I don't know why, but I think it's something, you know, like actual. You can really feel the tension on that. So what's your opinion about Donald Trump, for example? Are you a supporter or no?
Oh, no. First of all, I'd like to say I'm independent. So
that's a politically correct answer.
I don't like elephant and donkeys, you know, both Republican. Not that I don't like, I just like to be in between. I come from a country like Italy, where I grew up, that we have maybe five times the numbers of parties. So for Italians, it's easy to switch. It's like a buffet. Yeah. And in the United States, unfortunately, the options are just two.
And that's weird.
And, and it's a little weird because, I don't know, I cannot say that I like one more than the other, because sometimes what I don't like in one, I find the other. But it's hard really to say this is the party that really I can identify with. So I'm kind of independent because one party doesn't really fit.
I want to ask you, like a person, like a good observer to political scene, what do you think? What would be the future of next election?
Berlusconi, he has some skill of presenting himself. For example, he's using the trial.
Yeah.
Other will be terrified to say, oh, this trial, I better shut up. Maybe there are lawyers that give advice. He doesn't have any lawyers, I think. Actually, one of his former lawyers, Cohen, is trying to get him in jail. And that's the power, I think, of Trump. He doesn't have legal support, so that's sometimes really crazy. And the opinion of the public is what drives it. So he's becoming popular for that reason. And I think that also will be his downfall eventually, because you need to have some legal counsel, but he may be popular. I don't know as far as getting elected, because I know for a fact, I mean, it caused a lot of troubles with the FBI and other.
Yeah, a lot of trouble.
So I don't think they want him there. And even the Republicans then trying right now to find other, like this Indian entrepreneur. He's not probably too much known, but he's a new face of the Republican Party.
Do you know the name?
I can't recall his name, but right when I was leaving for the Italy, I saw an interview. But he's unknown. Indian America is a very charismatic entrepreneur as well. But I don't know, it was very reserved. Doesn't have the same energy of 80-year-old Trump. Okay. But it's interesting. The age doesn't affect him. So I think he's a character that, I mean, I don't wish him any success, but I see the pattern with Berlusconi. He was joking a lot. And he's an entrepreneur, but also a showman.
Yeah.
So people really enjoy that. I mean, if he talks, you can see, like his CNN, they gave him this platform. They want to invite him to destroy him, right? And then he made fun of everybody. And everybody just, they didn't know what to do because the rating went up to CNN. So, okay, let's keep him. And, you know, he's, he knows that entertain, and that's his kind of experience. So, like Berlusconi, he was running the TV. He knew how the people, what the people like. So those type of politics, I think maybe dangerous, but it's successful in a short.
I want to see, like, when when I die and Donald Trump die, I hope that I will go for the same place like Berlusconi and Donald Trump, just like a journalist, and see the election between Berlusconi and Trump to rule some Circo Volo.
That would be interesting because unfortunately they cannot run. One is in one place, but I think they may reconvene.
That's gonna be like crazy entertainment.
I don't know if you want to be there because once you in hell, you can't go out.
Yeah. Just a traveling traveling journalist through that hell circle. Yep. Here in Italy, you always have some, like, more than two parties, political parties.
It's a lot of parties.
Is that mean that Italian like to have a lot of option, to have that era when they can just pull off and go somewhere else?
You think many look at Italy, the land of art, ancient Rome. They always talk about the past, but they don't see the innovative things that Italians have created, because just to go back briefly, I don't want to go too much into Berlusconi, but for example, he created a party in January and in March already won the election, 3 months. Yeah. Trump didn't create a party. He went with the old establishment. Yeah. He said, I'm going independent, so if you don't vote me, and that means nobody wins in America, because only two, the third party. You know, there was Ross Perot in the 80s, the third party won 20%, but it's not going to happen. But, you know, Trump didn't create his own party. Berlusconi created a whole new party with his brand, Forza Italia, with soccer. And in a month, he put this together and he won. So now you see what is happening in Italy. We have a female prime minister. Italian and politics become really connected to entrepreneurship. So what is the left doing? They get another woman. Why didn't they choose a man? Well, they're not stupid. There's a woman in charge. We have to get another woman. I mean, this is something that you don't see in other countries. And also the Cinque Stelle is a party created online. It was created by another entrepreneur, Casaleggio, who died, but Beppe Grillo was also a co-founder. They give a lot of credit to Beppe Grillo, but Casaleggio was a software entrepreneur, so he created the platform. Was one of the most popular blog in the whole world, mostly visited. I mean, I'm not just making the number up. You can Google. At a certain point, his blog was the most visited in the world, the Beppe Grillo blog. Everybody was studying it. And he created this whole new system. I call it internetocracy. Basically, you voted for the candidate online, and there's no zero funding.
Okay.
Like they even go on TV and won. Become the first party in Italy. So I would say you see this no other places. You know, Italy really is in the forefront of creating a new system. That is a system that inspires Spain, Germany. I mean, all over Europe. So I don't know. It was not the best political system, but again, you can see the entrepreneurship of Italians. Same thing in immigration, when they go to another country, they create things. So
now when I'm watching the news from US, and when I'm watching some, you know, left center and leftist news, they always say that if you are not on that walk, you are a fascist. Like, if you vote for Trump, you're a fascist. If you not wear a mask, you're a fascist. And maybe that's the right moment to speak to the people and explain them what was fascist.
Like,
because fascism was born in here in Italy. And maybe that's a really good opportunity to speak about that. So I want to ask you if you can explain our audience what was about the fascism, and if you really see the how to say it, similarity between the real fascist and what we call the fascist to the present situation, for example, for the opponents of the leftists in the US?
Oh, yeah, well, good question. Yeah, fascism became like an umbrella term for every time you want to create something that is restricted, but is really a disservice of what fascism really was. It's not just somebody not allowing you to do something, like, if you don't clean your room, you know, my mother is fascist, you know, because she tells me always to clean the room, and I don't want to do it. She's forcing me to do something that I don't like. That is not fascism.
That's a lie.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a system that didn't allow any other parties. If you're a journalist, you couldn't print any other newspaper that talk badly or criticize the Duce. Everything was run by the state. I mean, in that way, maybe it was efficient because everything ran one way, but there was no liberty. There was a lot of violence. And of course, there was also the spread of colonialism that was connected to other, other democratic nation. But it was not a period that can just say, oh, you are trying to force me to think this way, so you're fascist. There's a lot of things that encompass architecture, art, so everything has to be fascist. Even a school, there is rule for wearing clothes. Sure. I mean, everything, even the way you eat, the way, and militarism. So it's not really accurate to say, you just want to wear the mask, you're fascist. I mean, maybe you don't like the idea, but it doesn't make you a fascist. So really look, I think people should do more their homework, look at the historical period. But I have to say, in Italy too, they use that term when somebody they don't like the new prime minister Meloni. She actually, I don't know, was bold enough to put the flame of Mussolini from Mussolini's grave, the Movimento Sociale Italiano, in the Fratelli d'Italia logo, which is the party that won. And I mean, as far as being fascist, even Travaglio, who is one of the biggest opponents, Berlusconi, very strong anti-fascist, will agree there's nothing fascist about her. Actually, it's very like Draghi, previous politicians, very pro-European Union. Sí. So sometimes the term is used as an umbrella term, but and to go back again to your suggestion, comment about the party, I think Italians like always variety. As you can see, you have olive tree here. Italians grew up with this flavor, variety, complexity. And this I noticed, if you look at Italians in the plaza reading a newspaper, this doesn't happen in any other country. You see somebody reading a newspaper, they have Unità and Corriere della Sera and sometimes Messaggero. And, you know, if you are visiting Italy, say, why those people are reading three newspapers, you know?
Yeah.
This may be less today because there are not too many printed.
Yeah.
But I remember growing up, Italians like to see the left, the right, and the Vatican. So everybody, it's very interesting, this multifaceted. They know what newspaper from the left will write, but they want to see the right and the center.
Why you didn't just print one newspaper with like three columns?
Yeah, I wish, but every newspaper is very opinionated. They get their funding from different parties.
Yeah, and
even the labor union in Italy, very political. So like tomorrow, we're going to have a strike, a four-hour strike. Is done because the bigger labor union that are from the Communist Party, they're not good enough. So there's a small union who's doing this for our, so it's central, it's not left. So, and it's another union, so I'm not sure what party they're affiliated, but sometimes you lose track. Yeah, so it's very complex.
You like strikes, like.
Oh yeah, why not? You have to take life with more philosophy, philosophia, like we said. Things, if you rush, nothing's going to change. Just you'll get there eventually. And maybe that's the secret of longevity. Italians really take things slowly. And even eating, there is some ritual. There are like eating, the break, work, not all day. And I mean, I live in the United States now in 20 years, and I went to some funerals and some of the people are only 80. And I said, what's going on here? 80, you should be young, you know? Italy, 100, 120. I think that's the secret sometimes. They take life slowly.
Okay.
They have passion on one thing, they follow it, but they like to take things as they go. So it's maybe something that you don't see in other countries.
So how to prepare for being an Italian. Like, if there is someone who really want to move to, for example, Tuscany, because there are different parts, guys. There are completely different parts of Italian. Every region are completely different. Yes. When we came here, we spoke about the difference between Emilia-Romagna and Romanian people than Tuscanian people. Assume that someone from US want to move to Italy. Mm-hmm. What is the main preparation for him? Of course, language, we know, but assume that we can't speak in Italian and we need some time, like one year, 2 years. But what I should know, how I should prepare myself to be an Italian?
Oh, well, good. First of all, I think get rid of the stress, you know.
Okay.
I live for a certain amount of years in the U.S. and sometimes I appreciate it that the United States are very efficient. For example, administratively, you want maybe a document, you go to the county, you know, you get the... And if you're looking for a citizenship application, I don't know if some of your viewers... Getting Italian citizenship is not that hard. You don't have to be born in Italy if you have relatives. So, and actually, we work with our center to help many citizenship, but just be prepared, things do not go smoothly and you don't get what you want right away. So just imagine things will get that eventually. For example, if somebody's drinking a cup of coffee right now and he's working, it doesn't mean that he's going to be there serving you, because the idea of the customer sometimes is right. Doesn't work if you have a cup of coffee in front of the clerk. So you have to kind of be patient with that. It may look rude for somebody. So what do you mean? I'm here. But, you know, somebody's having a break and it's like 2 o'clock. Maybe you see he's open 1:30. You should be, and they just not open. Don't get mad. You know, just these are small things. Because Italians like to kind of play it by ear sometimes. So you may get aggravated if you want everything to go the way you used to. So that's my first advice. So don't take things, don't imagine things will go straight the way you want. So try to be more relaxed, number one. Number two, spontaneity. Italians like to be spontaneous, very warm, as you probably have seen. Don't worry if somebody approaches you and try to kiss you, both cheeks, man, women. It's normal. They show the affection. As you can see, even the hands are always, I cannot help it. There is a saying, you want to see an Italian... tie his hands.
He can't
speak
them. He's
not going to survive.
He's paralyzed.
Or maybe keeping Italian quiet, tie his hands. I don't know if you heard about that. be prepared to have a lot of...
Okay.
And then last thing, maybe, try to travel in Italy. It's a small country. You can go different ways. And
and you like to travel? Like Italian likes to travel? Or
that's a good question. Not really. Italians like their own
Yes, I noticed that.
So I'm not very Italian in that when I travel. But you will be fall in love with even a small town like this. It's hard to want to travel, but if you can go different. This everything.
Okay, and if I'm falling in love in Italian woman, what I should expect it?
Oh, good questions. Well, first of all, the comment about being relaxed will apply, but Italian women may be emotional, so you have to be very emotional.
Roller coaster, right? I prefer to be an emotional roller coaster.
Oh yes, but they're very focused.
Okay.
And because they always make the Italian man do focus.
Okay.
So, but yeah, Italian women are very charismatic, charming, and they are very cultured too. So they may know facts that you probably don't know in the average culture. Like every Italian woman would like.
If you are an American, we can assume that like you don't know that.
But I don't want to make all erba un fascio. Like meaning, I don't want to say one Italian woman is like all Italian women. But there's definitely some aspects. So very charming. Of course, they like to do activities. And also you will find this. Many Italian women, maybe they don't really notice the beauty of art that you see, because Italians are, you know, they're raised in this beautiful place.
Yes.
Like when I came to see my friend after many years, and my friend was looking at me, why are you not looking at me? Why are you looking behind me? I said, well, I never noticed Valeria, you know, this beautiful monument. Well, you grew up here, see, but I just a church. You know, so you will be like amazed, and you know, the Italians say, It just was built in the 1100s. Who cares? You know? So they don't notice because they live in this beauty, and you may be like, feel like a little child, you know, looking in amazement. Yes. But after a while, you get used to it, everything.
So if you want to really, for example, piss off the Italian woman, what should you say to her?
Yes. Well, I would say, this is funny. They may like English, so say, especially songs. Stairway to Heaven, for some reason, is very popular. They like the lyrics, and they like always to understand, like translation. So yeah. If you speak English, you may have a little edge, you may help understanding some song, because a lot of Italian women like English and the American culture. But also depends. I would say also Poland and Germany find a way to connect that they are really interested in other culture, Italian women. And of course, they like passion. So when you have the chance, you can, you know, look Italian woman in the eye and see. But there's a certain point that you have to, give a little kiss. You know the moment, but Italian woman maybe will tell you. But you know how it goes. Maybe you can sing a song in English while you do that.
Okay, so kissing, singing a song. Okay. And what I never should do when I'm around, you know, Italian woman. What I need to avoid. What I need to avoid.
Oh, yeah, there is certain etiquette, especially culturally. I don't know if the audience is mainly from the United States, but Italians have certain things that in other country, like, for example, this idea of doing like this. It's very rude, and Italian hate it.
So, oh my God!
If you do like this, an Italian woman will look at you. Why? Because every Italian should have always this, which is a tissue.
That's like real tissue, like.
Yeah, I'm kind of old school, but
like old school.
But you can't do this.
My father always has got this same.
Well, I I'm a little old school. I'm a medievalist, but but anyway, don't do this.
Okay, never.
It's considered very rude. Or other things, and also when you sneeze, you know, coming from the United States, for some reason, they're obsessed by saying bless you when you sneeze. You know, anything, nobody cares. So if you sneeze and you look around, nobody will care. So
farting is the same way or no?
No. Farting, especially at the table. No.
Okay, no farting at the table.
And at the table, it's very important to know how to behave. Like Italians, really judge you when you're at the table.
Okay, so we can practice that. Okay, we can, Nicolino, we can practice that. Picture that we are on some, you know, good dinner with Italian friends, and I'm coming. Like I'm like you know, guy from Poland just coming and say, ciao ragazzi.
Oh yes,
it's okay. Okay, what I should know? How to behave? I need to remember?
First of all, this America, like you kind of put your elbow on the table.
On the table, okay, no elbow.
You kind of keep your hands under the table. Because,
no.
They may think you have they have swords or weapons. This deal today is done, so don't put your hands under the table, even though we don't have weapons, but it's still custom.
Okay.
And also, you can have really private conversation, like if you have a large table, like you talk with your neighbor, but everybody likes to talk together.
okay.
And children too, when you have children at the table, like everything goes around. And the other thing, if you have a bottle of wine, yeah, be careful. I see this in the United States. You know, you grab the bottle and you can. You have to wait for the one who invited you to pour you. And sometimes they appreciate that you bring the bottle of wine sometimes.
Okay.
Maybe flour or chocolate. Because sometimes if you bring a bottle of wine, you may say, your wine is not good enough. That's why I'm bringing. Some people may appreciate it, but you don't want to risk it because...
oh, my God.
If you go to somebody's house, they invite you, they want to do everything for you. So you have to bring something that just brings... like a flower, give something that's not too imposing, you know. Doesn't make them think that you don't trust them. Like chocolate, that is something extra that is there if you like. Flowers to bring this smell, but
vodka.
Of course, something they don't have, they will love something that is new.
Nice. That's very useful. Now I'm very regret that I didn't know that.
Oh no, you did that before.
Yes, I did a lot of mistakes because, for example, in Poland, when you are going for a dinner to someone's place, you always bring a wine or something like that. I always took it. Okay, I hope.
Well, it depends. Maybe it's not so bad, but it depends if they're younger.
I didn't have a second invitation from them.
Oh no! Okay. Or maybe it didn't work.
What are the rules in you when you're eating something? Like, you should eat fast or slow. You need to try everything. You can't leave. Like, you can take the last piece of something. What's the rule?
Oh, yeah. Well, Italians are very similar to the Chinese. Because, you know, if you have Chinese friends, you have to eat everything. You show you appreciate. Sometimes you have to do a little theater.
I'm good at this. I'm very good at this part. So,
but in Italy, it's the same. Maybe they're less hiding, you know. But they expect that you eat everything. So
everything,
if you don't like
it... Like my grandma.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the grandma. So if you don't eat it, they will say, oh, come on. They give you something else, but they want you to make sure that you are full and satisfied. And they will find out if you don't like it, you know, because you just don't eat it like with the passion.
Okay. And can you be like directly with them? Like say, okay, yeah. I don't like it. Like, you should say they will kill me after all.
Unless it's a pasta dish. If you invite it, it's a mother, like a grandmother, she's the queen of the house, you cannot criticize her.
Never.
But you know, if the son is doing a side dish, it's, oh, he always burn the green beans, you know?
Okay.
So the green beans is a little burn. Oh, yeah, you know, maybe you can joke together, but you have to be careful.
Okay, be careful.
Yeah, because, but if you don't like it, it's perfectly fine. I mean, just leave it on the side. They will really try to serve you something that is good, so it may not happen that you have something. But you can say, always you're allergic to that. So.
Okay.
Okay, I don't like that, I'm allergic. So.
Okay, so I've met them, perfect women. From Italian women, I didn't sneeze, so she accepted me. Then she took me to her mother for a dinner.
That's very important.
Bravi, yeah. Yes. I applaud her. I applaud the mother. Great. And then we've got the evening. I'm go with her.
Okay.
To you know, like directly to the bedroom. And if there is something what I should know, not about women at all, because I'm old, I know a lot, I've got a wife, sorry, but about the Italian women, maybe there is something what I shouldn't say on or behave before or after or during sex, please.
Well, I don't know.
Very curious.
Well, that'd be a very private moment. It depends on the women, really.
There is something like general, what you hear from your mother, sister or girlfriend that, hey, I met that, you know, like, sorry, no, from your mother, of course, because she was a saint. But from your girlfriend or the friend of your girlfriend that, you know, I've met that American and they can't behave because of that. Is there something like that or no?
Oh, well, it depends. I mean, they have stereotypes, Italians, about different nations, as, you know, everybody. But when they get to know you, this becomes something of the past because... First, they start with a stereotype. Okay, you're from Poland, you're from Germany, yeah. You're like that. Like, but then when they get to know you, it becomes a more private.
I fully understand.
Say,
to find that stereotypical thing what we can, you know, bring on top and discuss
but
about
if
that.
If you reach the moment that you are in the bedroom, I think you're beyond the stereotype. So I think be yourself.
Okay.
Be yourself.
Thank you. Nino Applauso.
My only advice is don't mention politicians' name.
No Berlusconi in the bed.
Berlusconi.
No. Berlusconi won't be sleeping with us.
Yeah, don't mention the word of any politician. You don't know the position of the... It will be a turn off. So just...
that was so charismatic. Like, you know, my microphone just down. But, okay. But after that, like, of course, that was a funny moment. We've got sex, we've got the lunch, I've got a date, I love her or I'm falling in love.
Oh, yeah.
And what is she expecting from me? Like, how I should behave after all? Like, I should call her, I should take her, like, I should marry her after 3 months, I should meet her mother. What's the, like, traditional Italian woman?
Well, this may vary, you know, if you meet a woman, Italian woman from the north,
yeah.
Different from Italian woman from the south, not to be stereotypical, but all my friends from the north, very few of them are married. They have long engagements. So in the south, they tend to marry more, not to say that.
Okay.
So it depends. You may have a long engagement if you are maybe with a northern Italian woman, whereas if you are with a southern Italian woman, they may be more pushing you to marry sooner. So, like some of my friends, they're 20 years engagement. So what's going on? They're not getting married, but okay. Just because the economy or okay. is not part of the. But it really depends on the woman. But be prepared for each situation. I mean, sometimes Italian women don't go for Italian men because of this long engagement. So who knows? Maybe they choose you because you know you're not Italian. They know you may be more serious, committed. Not to talk bad about Italian men, but they see sometimes non-Italian are more settled.
Make some commitment, like
exactly.
Yeah, make
see,
the marriage commitment.
Yeah, that's what attracts many Italian women because long engagement may work with some women, but if they see a non-Italian man that is stable, that they can trust, I mean, yeah. It's a big.
Yeah, Nicolino, well. Stop about sex and women. Sorry for that. Now start talking about the American Italian, because it's a topic that very yeah, interests me.
Very much,
and
yeah.
I think it's interesting also for people who live in Italy and live in America.
Oh, yes.
What's the specification of that kind of Americans? Because that's a really strong culture, like Polish yeah. in America, like American yeah. Polish well, community is like the same big, I think, the like Italian. But what about those people during that times? Can we say, like, you know, it was Mario Puzo and he wrote a lot about that and we know that point of view, but it's like 2023, it's a lot of things change.
Yes.
How can you characterize that group now?
Well, it's a group definitely changed from the past, but they're still very much in love with the tradition, especially eating together is still a very important thing, the food, the family. But, you know, I have to say as an Italian, but also American, that the quality may not be the same.
Okay.
Because many immigrants came in the United States and they recreate the Italian food. So, but it's still the same, the idea of being together. And I'm in touch with the Italian American Association. We have a lot of big dinners. And that's definitely still the case. And also helping and being with children. Italian-American with their children are always very loud. You know, they like
yeah,
to...
Yeah.
I see children at the table. You know, sometimes you look other type of like a British-American, Anglo-American, or maybe even German-American. Depends, you know, sometimes they more behave, the child. They have their own table. But I still see Italian-American family. They are all together with the kids. You know, they keep the tradition of the family. Everybody sitting together. That's a very important thing that still occurs. Maybe what changed is Italians are more conservative now, Italian American, than before.
Okay.
Before, the Italian American were more connected to more liberal, maybe because they were more object of prejudice. You know, the Italians were not considered mainstream American. They had Joe DiMaggio, a few people of pride, like in baseball, boxing, and music and art, but they felt a little bit, they always have to prove themselves. So they were more through, you know, the democratic type of party, the social justice. Now they're a little bit more on the conservative side. I find that many Italian Americans more Republican. I think it has to do with the fact that some of them are quite successful, they're wealthy. So to the Republican Party,
they don't want
there's
to
a
share
lot of tax
they...
break. Yeah. Yeah
they don't want to share.
They vote for a party that really takes care of the... not paying too much taxes. And so it's a different, I think, generation. But the values are still family, loyalty, to be with the community. I still see it.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a different generation from the past, yeah.
What do you feel when you're coming back to Italy? Like, because you are living in the U.S. And, of course, you are American-Italian. But do you think that you wanted to come back here?
And now I have a family in America. I have you know, my wife, the children.
Italian wife?
No, American.
Okay.
Southern Belle from South Carolina. And we met in Italy. So
oh, good.
When we were studying abroad. She went to see her father, went to see mine. But, yeah, she's a...
what is
you know,
she, what is her name?
Ginetta.
Ciao, Ginetta.
See, maybe she'll watch it. I hope, I don't know the part about Italian women. Maybe you can. I didn't say anything in the
podcast. No. Everything was
but,
very useful. Thank you. I make a note that every man just make notes.
Yeah, I was looking at studies, you know. This
I fully understand. He heard that from his father.
Now that I'm living in America, I see when I come here, I feel a nostalgia. You know, okay. I grew up here for a good portion of my life, and 20 years, but I. Like I mentioned at the beginning, I hear the Italian language, I go back. I hear somebody speaking Italian, I'm back home. And then I look at the air, at the smell, and I hear I'm back again. And the people, of course, when I see. So that's what I miss. Yeah.
And you studied medieval literature. And from my perspective, it's a little bit funny that you moved to US and teach about medieval. If they know anything about that, they think that the history starts 200 years ago.
Yeah, it's not too ancient history, but still I try to connect. I grew up in a medieval town and I brought with me the love of castle, even the political system of the Republic in Florence and Tuscany. Yeah. So there's a lot of we can learn from the medieval time. So
what we can learn from that time? If you can compare it for present problems.
Oh, well, it's a great age of instability.
Yes.
And science and innovation. I don't know if you think about the medieval times like that, the Dark Ages, but from a perspective of a scholar,
I studied very long. Long oh, time. Yeah, that's like, not a Dark Ages was just a period, like a small period after.
The people from the Renaissance, they came up with this term because they said we are between this period of 1,000 years and the great ancient Roman, and now we have the Renaissance. And what came before is just dark. Nothing. So, you know, the name stuck, but it's a very important period. I mean, just what you're wearing, this was invented in the medieval. Even the button, this table is meaning the forks, the books, the universe, everything.
Do you know the different name, like the word medieval? It came, of course, what you told, but the other mention was because there were a volcano eruption.
They
told about that mm-hmm. that was like a couple of years when the sky was like gray and the sun wasn't. That's the another.
There is a different, but it's really derogatory, unfortunately. Like dark, you know, or medio aevum, mean
in between something.
Yeah, age in between. So it doesn't have its own identity.
It's always between something. Like the time is always between something. It's never like, you know. Okay, we ended the war. Like now.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but coming back to the question, because that was a very important answer. Like what we can learn from that medieval times.
I mean the music notation was invented there. All the notes, the glasses they were wearing. Even the mechanical clock, I mean, many of the things, the buttons.
My question is much more like transcendent. Like, I want to ask you about something like, can we find some solution of the present problems in the medieval? Because you told something very important that was a time when there was instability, like a lot.
Oh, yes, a lot.
Science,
growth,
a lot. And like, it sounds like present situation.
Oh, yeah.
How do you achieve their problems with instability, for example?
Oh yeah, this is very interesting. When I teach medieval history, even literature, today we have the blogs, you know, like they used to write manuscripts short, like social media, you know, it was done with the horse, but very similar. Everything changes over time. So all the cities that you see, they're surrounded by city walls and they all fought each other. You know, that city over there, I mean, was an enemy of this. So, and they didn't know what next day. So it's similar to us because we don't know. There's a big war too with Ukraine and Russia. And the idea is to try always in the medieval time to stick to the basic, but also try to understand the core of things. For example, they connected with the group of people in the community, and each group was different. So they find the structure according to who was. What type of social class? Just to give an example, in Florence, we had a lot of noble people during Dante's time. They have all aristocrats, and then they achieved power, so they create this big palace. If you go to Siena, you find a different architecture during that time. They were all merchant, mm-hmm. and they became entrepreneur with more banks, and they banned the noble. They couldn't be in the government, and also the artisan, they were not in the government in Siena. But then in Florence, they made a different law. Only the artisan were allowed. So, you know, every community, if you look at the medieval age, that's the same thing, is not the same. So they adapted the type of community. They create innovation within their own, because they were a small community and the numbers were smaller, but they were able to thrive to, what Candide Voltaire, you know, said at the end of Candide, they were able to harvest their own garden.
Yeah.
And they valued their own community very much. And that's what I think we can learn from, really try to value our community here and grow from what everybody can contribute. And help, of course, people outside the community, otherwise becomes, but the sustainment really comes from the community, or the small community of people that you get to know really closely. And I feel that's what you can learn from the medieval period, so.
Thank you, Nicolino. We'll try to learn. Okay, last question and you will be free. But the conversation is great. There are so many interesting topics. But the last question is about the current situation in Italy and with Italian culture and Italian society. Yes. What kind of problems are you notice now, present, these days? What is the biggest achievements in the future? What the Italians need to do to maybe come back to their 60s? What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, the 60s. Oh, yeah, you're referring when there was a big... Italians were able to pick themselves up from after the Second World War. I see today there is innovation. Italians are still trying. But I think what Italy needs to do is to try to go back, to try to benefit their own Italian people. Because right now, Italy is the number one exporter of machinery, you know, in the world. And even in the United States, they buy a lot of machine. A lot of Italians, they leave Italy and they're in the medical field and physics. I mean, look, the last year Nobel Prize of Physics, I mean, was an Italian with another American. And the United States is a big supporter of scientific research.
Yeah.
So we're losing a lot of Italians, very brilliant Italians, that cannot be supported by the local Italian government. Even with the European Union, I mean, it's limited because you always have to do something to benefit of the European Union. So I think Italy really needs to go back to do the interests of their nation, not to sound like very conservative, like Italy first, like Salvini says, and not at all, because he has a more restrictive view, this type of right-wing party. They just very anti-immigrant. I mean, we can value immigrant because that's what they bring. So we keep that idea and that flow, and of course with some regulation, but can't just dismiss and send everybody home like some political parties say to get votes. So I would say Italy needs to find a balance between the internal resources of Italian, the outside resources that benefit Italians. And that will benefit the country to grow and have more children, because Italy has the lowest rate.
Make a lot of sex, guys.
Italians don't have only one child.
Yeah, one of the lowest rate of born in Europe.
That is another thing. So Italy really needs to invest more in their own young entrepreneur, researchers, and try to give... more opportunity also to incoming immigrants. So there's harmony between the two groups. And that is the challenge. And also the new group of Italians that are acquiring, like for example, the Afro-Italian is a very important component of Italian society. Yeah. There are about a million of them.
Okay.
And they don't have citizenship because, you know, to be a citizen, you have to be have somebody in your family that is Italian. Many of them come from Africa. And they don't have any connection with the relatives, but they contribute a lot. Now there are a lot of Afro-Italian in connected with the political post. But some of them have citizenship, some other don't. So there's a movement to try to change the law for citizenship too. That I will think is time to do, so we can incorporate. Because also Afro-Italian can bring this renaissance as. There's a big movement in the Afro-Italian community. All this, I think, has to be combined. Italians have to be more open-minded, love the idea of discovering themselves and discovering others. And all these things, I think, is a question of mentality. And And also, so I think that may be the secret of hopefully improve the situation in Italy. And there is hope, I think, for that.
To change your mentality.
Yes, esatto, importante.
Very important. Nicolino, thank you very much. I need to say this joke like the third or fifth time. Applauso.
Ah, grazie, I appreciate it.
That was a pleasure to meet you. So, see you in the future.
Grazie, tanto,
and grazie mille, grazie. Ragazzi, for watching that Luke Gamrot channel. It's a difficult conversation with interesting people about the, I hope, interesting and maybe a little bit how to say it, I forget the word. Controversial. Bravi.
So, un pochino. I hope I didn't say too much political stuff.
I think it's very important to understand Italian. That's the reason why we're talking, to understand how to become Italian. So, guys, how to become Italian with Luke Gamrot and today my guest, Nicolino Applauso. So thank you, see you, subscribe, like, share, and see you in the next episode. Bye.
Arrivederci.